This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
All right, let's, you want to get it going here?
And Brock Rom.
It's TV, baby.
Welcome to episode 10 with our guest, Daryl Miles. Daryl is the Assistant Director of Athletics Video Services at Illinois. We discuss his passion for helping students and driving awareness for diversity and inclusion, and his background, which includes starting a video department at Illinois amidst a Final Four run.
3, 2, 1, clap. We'll clap on clap. 3, 2, 1, clap. I'm an idiot. I say we're going to clap on clap every time, and I do it afterwards.
I watch you. Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com. Let's just jump right in. Excited to have Daryl joining us here on the podcast today. Daryl has spent many years at Illinois, and before that he was in Fresno and went through the Husker Vision program as well, and just love to get into his background and starting a program at the University of Illinois amidst the Final Four run of that famous 04 team and get up and running. We'll talk about some diversity and inclusion, and Daryl has a real passion for working with students and trying to bring them along and introduce them into the field. So let's go ahead and get started, though. Daryl, thanks for joining us, but will you just help us understand your background and how you got started and what made you interested in this field?
Well, first off, thanks, guys, for having me here. The entrepreneurs, if you will, in the industry here doing this podcast and it being informational for everybody. I have a unique background. Not a lot of people kind of know, you know, how I got into this business. When I went to college, I ended up changing my major 3 times. It's the kind of story I like to tell my students, and this will kind of weave into the student involvement thing later on. But I changed my major 3 times and eventually found broadcast journalism. And what were the first couple? Psychology and then music education.
I was a music major in the beginning too, before I switched. So
yeah, you were in trumpet, right?
Yeah, University of Nebraska did a very good job of their first year. They're really hard on the music majors. They did a very good job of weeding people out, and they weeded me out very well. I was like, this is not for me.
What'd you get in oral dictation?
the hardest class was actually music theory. That one was, that is very difficult. It was hard for me because you're taking an art form and actually applying mathematical structure around it, and that was just not my bag. So
do you feel like your music background helps you in this field
every day? From being able to tell stories with music is a really really kind of where I've hung my hat on some of the stuff that I'm doing. There's being able to take sound bites with your A-roll and be able to find the parts in the music to help drive home some of the emotion is a big deal for me. And so being able to, you know, cut on the downbeat of a measure, or being able to find a place to edit on the pickup of a measure, doing some subdivision in terms of maybe some edits and with eighth notes or 16th notes and things of that nature, even changing the pitch on some music to be able to kind of match Frankenstein some pieces together so they come together, being able to match the key and things of the nature. I use that stuff all the time.
All right, so let's get back to where you started before I rudely interrupted you with, so you were a psychology major, you were a music major, and then you found broadcasting.
Yes. So got into the Husker Vision program in 1998, 99. I'm dating myself. Yeah, there was stuff before 2000 for some of you younger folks out there in creative. My mentor coming in was David Peterson, who's ahead of Auburn right now. Kind of got me in and showed me the ropes a little bit. But the thing that kind of drove home what I wanted, why I wanted to stay in athletics, was I was covering wrestling NCAA championship. This is before those of you out there, we were allowed to actually shoot the championship. So the only thing we could do was shoot the, you know, the guys warming up or whatever. So it was at Carver Hawkeye Arena. And those of you who don't know, wrestling is huge in Iowa and Iowa City. So the national championships were there. Nebraska Brian Snyder was going for a national championship in 157 pounds. I'm recording him going through, and then he walks up to the podium and gets ready for his competition. And it happened to be a guy from Iowa that he was facing. And anybody who's been to Carver has knows that they have this big, huge tunnel. Their arena is like built into the ground. And so they have this huge tunnel for everybody to walk through to get into the arena on the ground floor. And so I'm standing there waiting for Iowa to come down, Iowa guy to come down. And you can hear the crowd start to rumble a little bit and get a little loud. And then it gets a little bit louder where they can kind of see his feet. And then they can see him from the waist. And then they see the Iowa emblem come up full. The whole entire arena can see him. And the emotion and energy in that arena, I was like, I get goosebumps every time I think about that, because like the passion that is there, that's their guy representing their school, not just the people in the town, but classes and classes of people who've come through that school before then that represented that emblem. And that energy that was there is unmatched. And I was like, yep, this is it. I want to be in college athletics. I think it's, you know, nothing against pro sports. But there's nothing like that energy inside of a college arena where, you know, you're in a big time field, big time game, big time match, and you feel a lot of energy in there. So that's why I got in the passion of what I'm doing.
How are you able to kind of translate that passion into continuing to grow in the field, you know, continuing to push yourself to get better and better?
I would say the big thing is just for me is to understand that I have room to grow, right? Like you have to be humble in this business. And because someone will humble you. I mean, I see some of these younger creatives out there are doing some things. I'm like, God bless it, man. Okay, I got to get in the shop and do some things, because some of these kids are passing me by, and it's frustrating at times because I don't have the type of time that I would like to devote to some of this in my craft. But on the other hand, it's inspiring to see some things that are out there. And really, it's just seeing how people are pushing the envelope. I mean, you've seen some of the things that are coming out of Ohio State, some of the things that are coming out of LSU, some of the things that are coming out, some independent contractors out there. And then you got some people who are doing some things at some of the non-traditional schools, Bethune-Cookman and Arkansas State and University of Ohio. And, you know, so there's some places where people are coming up with some really good stuff. And you know, so that kind of stuff pushes me. The other thing, we'll get to the student aspect of it, is the other thing that pushes me passion-wise is watching some of these students come in here and realize the same thing I realized when I was in Carver, right? That this is what I want to do. The light bulb comes on, and then, you know, they light up, and I'm watching, you know, the Karina Angladas of the world or the Weston Carters or, you know, those people who are coming through the program and seeing these things and being entrenched in it and falling in love with it. It's great to see. So that's in lies the passion for me as well.
Do you want to get into what you attacked when you were a student, and after realizing that was your passion, how you went after your job and maybe get into Fresno a little bit?
You know, I fell in love with softball, video board being in part of entertainment. You know, that softball team, they bless their heart. I love that softball team. I love that program. I love those coaches there. And, they parlayed me into a situation where, you know, I could work with the Lincoln Salt Dogs and have that experience, and then also put me in position to go out to Fresno, California, and head up a division out there, a AAA affiliate for the Giants, being so young in school, coming straight out of school and be able to head that stuff up. But, you know, that put me in position to, when I was following softball, to put me in position to be able to parlay that into a position over in Fresno, California.
Now, how did you end up at Illinois from Fresno, and what were some of your early experiences there?
So I left, I was in Fresno not very long. One of the things I realized is that, baseball is a very special sport. Yes. And it takes some very special people to do it. And, you know, nothing against baseball, but it just wasn't my cup of tea. You know, that grind is a special grind, and you got to love that sport inside and out. And I was doing it for the entertainment aspect of it. And so, you know, I want to get back to college athletics because I felt like that's where my passion was. So I came to Illinois in 2004, helped start a department with Andy Young. There, he brought me over. I worked with him at Nebraska when he was in grad school, when I was an undergrad, and started a department of two, and we got plopped down in the greatest basketball season in the history of Illinois. And it was a whirlwind because it's the two of us trying to cover all 19 sports. I tell you, is when I tell the story of some of our students that we had two cameras, one camera at one point in time, but two cameras eventually, one for each of us. But there were times where we're literally, he goes to cover a soccer game, I go to a volleyball match, I hand over the camera to him so he can shoot the rest of the soccer game to finish it. He comes back to me, hands me the camera so I can finish off the volleyball match. We had days like that, starting up the department. But, you know, that 04-05 team, when we're both Nebraska guys, coming from University of Nebraska that doesn't have a strong history in basketball, to University of Illinois where they're winning, I think they were on their third or fourth straight Big Ten title at the time, projected to go to the Final Four, in which they ended up doing at that time. We made some jokes to our friends back home about, hey, did you know that on these basketball tournaments, they play them more than one day at a time? Like, you can, like, be there the second day. And they actually make trophies for basketball. We didn't know that at the time, but they actually make trophies for basketball. But, you know, it was baptism by fire, but it was so fun being a part of that and trying to implement some things that we knew that would work. There was some resistance from the administration at first because their environment was so good. But we knew that there were things that we could take even a notch higher. And once we were able to kind of squeak in and sneak in some things to showcase that a little bit, you know, we took off from there. But yeah, the 04-05 team was so great. D Brown, man, I love that dude. He got it. He understood it. Still my favorite basketball player of all time, and good friends with him too. So, I look back on that fondly. But yeah, Illinois was a good attraction to get back into college athletics.
So when you started at Illinois, how did the student program work? Was there anything in place? Did you guys gradually start it that first year? Did it take a little while? How did that work?
There was nothing. We built this from the ground up. So, you know, the program's modeled after Husker Vision at Nebraska. So, you know, it went from, you know, us arguing to pay our students because originally administration didn't want us to pay our students. We wanted to pay our students. It went from, you know, hiring about three or four students to start out with to eventually getting to 20, 25, 30 to now we can top out. You know, the largest class we've had has been 52 at Illinois. You know, starting from scratch was big, you know, being able to have a good foundation, but also examining the landscape that we had at Illinois. There were certain things that we knew coming from Nebraska that wasn't going to translate at Illinois, just based upon, you know, the interest in some of the sports. Like, for instance, you know, there were a lot more chips in men's basketball than there were at Nebraska. So there were a lot more effort thrown into that. Football wise, you know, football is king at Nebraska. Illinois is a program that's still trying to get its footing. So, you know, there were some things that we had to examine on what we were doing there. But in terms of implementing our students, you know, the main goal was to be able to provide an opportunity the same way we had at Nebraska for them to be able to get some professional experience, get their feet wet, and kind of feel out exactly what they wanted to do. One of the big speeches we give our students is that, you know, we understand that, that, you know, the whole entire purpose of you going to college is for you to get set, for you to get a job. Like, the social stuff is great and finding significant others is great and parties are great, but you know, you are there to figure out exactly what you're supposed to be doing and get the skill set ready for you to work. And so that's kind of stuff that we brought to the table in terms of our program when we built it, is making sure that these students understood that, you know, this is a job and that we want to make sure that we're providing you some skill sets so that way you can become a professional.
I think one of the challenges I've seen being at a college program is recruiting students at times. You know, I've seen on the board people talk about, like, you know, how do you go about building up a student worker base? How do you go about finding kids who are passionate and training them up? When you were starting the program and maybe even to now, how do you go about recruiting kids? How do you go about finding people that are passionate about this to bring into your program?
It's an ongoing evolutionary process, right? So, like, at the very beginning, it was like take out an ad in a paper, in a student paper, and put some flyers up in the journalism college. Then it evolves to establishing relationships with your journalism professors and making sure that they understand, finding the ones that understand the value in this. And then there are some other implementation that we've done with some tours and some classes that kind of run through the department as well. And then, you know, Big Ten Network coming on with implementation of Student U was a big asset for us as well. You know, having that BTN tag, that Fox Sports tag, along with Final Line of Productions has been something that we can put as an asset to attract students, but also looking at a situation where you're kind of coming outside the box of what you've usually done. So, like I talked about the journalism college, but also it opened up to some students that really are passionate about it, but may not be their majors. We've had business majors and we've had a medical student that's come through our program. We've had English majors. We've had all kinds of gamut, but to be able to put yourself in position, get in front of some clubs and establish some relationships is really important. And then word of mouth too. You know, there's a reason why there's a subtle reason why these kids are wearing a t-shirt that Final Line of Productions is on the back of it, you know, to get some advertising. Let's see if we can get them a jacket they can walk around campus a little bit with so people can see them and then their peers see them on the floor. There's nothing better in terms of advertising to watch a kid be shooting on the floor at a basketball game. And it was a hard ticket for people to get into and their peers see them on the floor and guy dove right next to him or whatever. Right. So, and so that they're close to action, but you know, you got to evolve and see what's going on around there with our program. What we've done is we'll probably get to that a little bit later, but we've changed some things as well. Just looking at the landscape of college athletics and creative as a whole, but finding people who are passionate is word of mouth, establishing relationships and you know, and sometimes it's just luck.
Yeah, I think we can continue on the student path here a little bit, and then we can get into a little bit more about how your role has evolved and changed over the years as well. Just from the student perspective, what do you think is been the part that A, you've enjoyed the most, but also B, you feel like provides the most value for the students, and what have you seen them really focused on, especially now that the landscape is really shifting more towards a digital social world?
Well, I'd say the easiest thing to see results from the quickest is, you know, the student use side, the live production side, because that's the form of sports media that they're most familiar with. They watch TV, they experience the games live. They're used to that aspect. So them coming into the program and experiencing that right away, and watching them kind of, oh wow, I didn't have no idea that all this went into a broadcast, and watching that those wheels turn and them figure that stuff out has been rewarding. But the other thing is that's been rewarding is watching some kids who are creative, who have not had that avenue to be creative, have not had, they've been kind of restricted on, you know, whether it's their major, whether it's their background, and watching those students kind of come into the program and we go open gamut. Okay, you cover soccer and just go whatever you want. So can I go shoot, you know, I want to shoot some stuff with the girls coming in with the lens flare and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, go ahead. go ahead and do that. Bring it back to me. We'll evaluate this and we'll take a look at it. And you can just kind of see them going, oh, I got freedom to kind of do this. I can go shoot this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We got a Ronin. You want to go try that Ronin out and put the rig on and go, yeah, I really want to go do. Yeah. I want to do. And like watching that evolution is extremely rewarding when they kind of see some of these restrictions they've had kind of lifted and they can see this runway where they can kind of take off and the kind of the sky's the limit. We have a social media group that kind of meets on a, you know, weekly or biweekly basis. And some of the ideas that come out of that group, we had a pitch they had where they were going to do this painting of our head coach. And it was going to be this kind of confirmation that we had the right guy at the helm. And when it was pitched, it was one of those situations where you're like, man, that is so far out there. But like, all right, let's do it. Let's see where it goes. And to see them all come together and the group goes, okay, yeah, we'll work with the painter on this, and then we'll go shoot this on this day, and then we'll rewrite it. Well, who's going to be able to voice it over? Well, you give me the script, I'll get whoever we want. What kind of voice do you want? Oh, we want this, and this. All right, fine, we'll find it, and get the kids in a situation where they can even audition the voice actors for it, right? So I like this guy, I like this person, I like this person, like. To see them walk through this process, I'm getting excited about it, as you guys can tell. To see them walk through this process and their eyes open to what's possible for them is so rewarding. And it's something I'm really, really passionate about because it just it keeps me young, but it also lets me know that when the results on the field aren't what we want them to be, when the revenue is not coming in the way we want it to be, when the ticket sales aren't quite there or things of that nature, to know that I'm still making a difference and that even if it's a situation where these kids have 90% talent and I just gave them a 10% of this opportunity that they took it and run with it is so rewarding that, you know, to watch some of these students have come out and we've had a lot of students have gone and done some really, really good things. And just to know that I was a small part of that, even if it's a situation that said, yeah, you're part of the program and that's all I had to do with it. Right. But to be able to provide them these opportunities, it's just really rewarding.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic to really just say yes, right? To say, you know, yes, go for it. Like, let's talk about an idea. Okay, yeah, go for it. And then if it comes back and there's tweaks or there's adjustments that need to be made, or you can help them more because they took the first step.
Yeah, and the thing is, and this is for the creators and students who are out here listening for this, if you're on a college campus, I'm telling you right now, especially if you're in the right programs, I'm telling you right now, this will be the least restrictive area that you'll be involved in. Once you get out in the pros and get out there with corporate sponsors and things of that nature where they're controlling and they'll have all these ideas. It's like, well, yeah, we want this rabbit to come down and have this animation. And we do, and you're looking at them going, this is crazy, but you're going to have to do it because they're paying the bills. You're in a situation right now where if you have something that's off the wall that you want to execute, or you want to get better in Photoshop, or you want to try stuff, not Photoshop, but After Effects, or you want to try something in Cinema 4D or 3D animation, and those tools are available to you in the collegiate realm, man, go after it. Because once you leave them doors and college shuts that door, I'm telling you, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a little bit harder for you to find those avenues where you can kind of explore and do that in a realm where you can polish your work the way that you would in the college setting.
Well, and it's also cool at the college level to get to work with, you know, sports like softball or gymnastics or the volleyballs, you know, maybe more of the non-revenue sports that actually really appreciate your work, right?
Yes. I can't tell you enough that, you know, I work with the women's gymnastics team here and, you know, that's my little bubble of refuge, right? So I'm the head of the department and I'm dealing with social media across the board in terms of football, men's basketball, you name it, and trying to get people where they're supposed to be. And I get to hear some of the bad news and I have to deliver some of the bad news. And I may not have the time to be as creative as I want to be, but when I get into that little bubble with women's gymnastics and I may make a motivational video for them or a promo video. We don't even have a video board for them, but I may make a promo video for them that's creative, where they're involved in an elaborate shoot with lights and things of that nature. And and you see they'll come back. It's, oh, you know, thank you so much for coming out and doing this. This is, or I make it, but, oh, that video was so awesome. I really appreciate that. And just that gratitude is, and I'm not saying I'm looking for, hey, all right, I did a good job. I'm not looking for a pat on the back, but it's just nice to feel appreciated. It's nice to feel that you're not in a situation where, you know, that people feel entitled to what you're doing, that, you know, well, you, yeah, I expect you to make this video and I expect you to spend, you know, the next 7 to 2 hours inside of your editing booth and not see your kids and, you know, do this. And yeah, and then we're going to make corrections. You're going to go right back into the editing booth for another 6 to 12 hours and do this. And, you know, and be entitled as opposed to those. And not only that, but those other sports, the smaller sports, the Olympic sports, you can take some chances. You can shoot some things and go, oh, well, that didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. Well, no, we won't do it that way next time. But, you know, you can take some chances with those groups because some of the pressure is not as high stakes as some of the other revenue sports.
Appreciate how much you're sugarcoating everything here. This is great. it seems like a natural progression here to talk about how your role has shifted from, you know, creating the opens for basketball and football and directing those shows to what you're doing today and overseeing a little bit more, and obviously with your focus on with women's gymnastics there. Can you walk through a little bit of your progression?
I used to say all the time that my job at Illinois has not been the same job from year to year. It has evolved and changed and evolved. And I would probably say that up until probably the last 2-3 years, it has not been the same. Like the last 3 years, it has been pretty much the same job. But, you know, when I first at Illinois, I was directing every men's, women's basketball game and every football game. You know, I was the main technical guy at Illinois. And as the department grew, you know, my role kept changing. And then, you know, oversaw the Student U program, BTN group, and worked really directly with students and worked with streaming and things of that nature, and then evolved into the creative aspects. So I was doing stuff for web. And then when I eventually got into the chair, you know, it became a realization after the first about 4 months that I can't run 250 miles an hour trying to hang on to a lot of the stuff I was doing before I got in the chair. You had to delegate. You know, my wife and kids would kill me if I was trying to do all the stuff that I wanted to do. But it was that for someone like me, and there are probably a lot of people out there like myself that, you know, pride themselves on trying to be self-sufficient and be independent and things like that, to go out and delegate and completely, like, there's one thing to delegate and then kind of go, oh, hey, what, how's that edit going on that shoot? How's that music video going on? You know, to completely let go and let people do what you hired them to do. And maybe personally some things may come out and the video may turn, I was like, that's not the way I would do it, but be okay with that from the standpoint of knowing that it's better for the group that this stuff is being delegated. You know, my job has evolved and changed, and it is it's a good challenge. It's a challenge I like to accept, but, you know, it is something I cherish in terms of finding the new positives, if you will. So, you know, putting, you know, our group is kind of young, and finding, you know, individuals that we can bring on as full-time staff members and putting them in charge of like a women's basketball program that needed some TLC. We have a member here who's brought that program up and is doing some really great things. We have another individual that's doing some things for our volleyball and softball program who is killing himself, but doing a fantastic job at what he's doing. And the evolution of our guy that's doing things with our football program, the evolution of our guy that's doing things with our men's basketball program, where they started out two, three years ago and where they evolved to is where my passion is now, and how can we progress this program to get to the point where we want it to be, and how can I push those buttons, and that's where the evolution has evolved for me. I keep using evolve, but that's where it's gone for me, and that's how it's changed. Is you know, you go from being a doer to a delegator, a captain, if you will. You know, you're not necessarily the guy on the field, you know, doing the plays. You're not necessarily the quarterback or the running back. You're the head coach on the sideline. You're calling the plays. And sometimes it's hard not to jump in there and do it yourself. But, you got to have faith in what people are doing.
Beyond the delegation aspect, you know, what are some of the other challenges of being kind of the manager, the head of the department that maybe you didn't expect coming into this role?
People. Managing people. You know, it is anybody who jumps into the managing spot, it is people are challenging, and it is and it's not a negative at all. It's just everybody has their quirks and how they work and what they do and you know what motivates them, and it is, you know, from dealing with people who may be dealing with some stuff, some personal stuff at home, to life-changing events where people are having kids and dealing with people who are putting kids in daycare. And this COVID stuff has been completely a game changer in terms of that, you know, in terms of, you know, making sure that you're in touch with everybody and making sure that their mental health is where it's supposed to be. But like, that's, I would say that's the biggest challenge. It's just, you know, dealing with personalities and making sure that, you know, personality A and personality B can get along. We can put them on a project and they can do what they need to do, but also making sure that, you know, strengths are being used for individuals. Like, I'm not going to try to put somebody on a project where I know that's their weakness, but also put them in a situation where maybe I can tag them with somebody who's stronger in that area where they can start to learn some of those skill sets and get a little bit better. You know, a lot of times I talk about like raising our floor in our program. You know, I'm not really worried about our ceiling. You know, we have a lot of potential out there in our group. It's going to take some time, but you know, what does our worst look like? What does our bad look like? Can we get that to get better? And that's the most important aspect of it. But you know, dealing with people is probably the most challenging thing. And one group is different than the other. And I tell you this, those of you who are in hiring positions, chemistry is so important. Chemistry is so important, because you bring in the wrong person and you were humming along and you bring in the wrong person, it can screw up a ton of things. And so you end up fixing a lot of problems because the chemistry is off.
What I saw early on in the Slack group was a lot of younger professionals, maybe first job out of college, asking, how do I approach senior admin about this idea I have, this issue I have, this budget we need? And somebody who's went from that level, you know, up through senior admin, what advice can you give to those young professionals when they need to approach senior admin about something, a project they want to do, a budget they want approved, etc.?
I would say the first thing they need to understand is no doesn't mean never. No means maybe right, not right now. And that's probably one of the hardest things to try to understand. You know, now that I'm sitting in this chair and understanding what's going on, like, you may, hey man, we need it. Oh, the you know, the new Sony came out, the Alpha series, I really want that camera, this is all the things it can do, da-da-da-da-da-da. And here I'm looking at my budget going, yeah, you're gonna have to shoot on this camera for a little bit longer. Like, but in the back of my mind I'm going, okay, you've made a good case, I know you did good work, I know you've done your research, and we want to progress and move forward. Any manager is going to want to make sure you have the tools that you need to be able to do well in your job. Like, it'd just be stupid if you're not, right? But understanding that the no may mean not right now, it may not mean next year. It may be a situation like, hey man, we got to put some pennies in this piggy bank and save a little bit of money so we can get to where we want to go. Or maybe a project that you're pitching and go, hey, we want to do this for football. We want to do this open and this will be great. And we take them with a picture, right, where we're going to put them in the woods and we're going to put this makeup and stuff on them and we're going to do this. Like, right. It may be a situation where you go, I don't know if our group is ready to do something like that. How about we do this? Why don't we try this with this group? And let's see if you can do this with, I don't know, let's do it with wrestling or men's basketball or one of our other sports. And let's see if you can execute this project and see if this will turn out. Because some of the stuff you're dealing with time management too with our athletes. But, you know, I guess the biggest thing from coming from that spot to where I am right now is understanding that all of this is a process, and there are just so many different variables that go into the decisions that are going on. You know, if we were in a vacuum, our department would look completely different. There'd be a lot of things that we would have. But, you know, when we're weighing, you know, for instance, asset manager or asset management versus the newest tools for shooting, asset management at the point in time is going to win out, because in the long run, we're going to be more efficient there. We can come back and get the newest tools, because guess what? 2 years later, there's going to be a new Sony camera that's going to come out, and Canon, a new Canon camera that may come out, a Panasonic that may come out. It's just understanding that there's more into decision-making that than just what you're dealing with in your, I hate to say smaller plate, but in your little, your area that you're dealing with. Let's say you're covering football. Yeah, football is important. But in the grand scheme of things, all this stuff comes together. And I'm just dealing with collegiate athletics. All this stuff comes together with a bigger picture, and understanding how that fits is important.
One thing that I'm curious about is, you're a black man in what is an overwhelmingly white world in broadcasting. Like, it gets, feels like it gets less so every day. But, you know, how have you seen that kind of evolve over time? How is it affected you, and what do you see the future of the industry being with, you know, some of these movements we've seen toward diversity and inclusion?
Well, first off, thanks, Garrett, for recognizing I'm black. I really do appreciate that. No, seriously though. It is, I mean, something that I have to be cognizant of, and it's, they're not that many of me. First of all, in the industry, right? Second of all, they're not that many of me in the position that I'm in. Right. So I'm cognizant of that on a daily basis. At some point, sometime during the day, I'm thinking about that. In terms of the movement and things of the nature that has happened, you know, whether it's Black Lives Matter or anything, any other social injustice stuff that has been kind of catching some momentum. I think it's important to make sure that there are adequate voices in the room. And I'll say this from the perspective of not go, okay, I checked the box. I got a woman in the room. I checked the box. I got this black guy in the room. I checked the box. Oh, here's my Latinx in the room. You know, you need to make sure you have multiple perspectives, because Daryl Miles, his journey is completely different than other black folks in the industry, right? You know, my parents had a different upbringing and a different set of values than some others may have had. And so to make sure that we have different perspectives, there'll be some underlying very common issues that we may have, or very common circumstances that we may have grown up with. But to understand that the diversity is diversity in perspective as well. And so understanding that let's not check the boxes and go, hey, we have our token quota person, blah, 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 but make sure that we have perspectives that are most important, to make sure we have perspectives taken care of. And so the future of this industry in terms of, you know, making sure that we're providing opportunities. And I you know, I want to shout out to those HBCUs that are out there that are doing some things too. And some of these schools that are, and some of the non-power five leagues that are doing some great stuff and making sure that we're in position to give opportunity to those individuals who are coming and graduating from those institutions, not look at the same power five schools they keep plugging out, and not say power five schools aren't doing a good job. We're doing a good job of putting some people out there, but a lot of times we kind of get caught up in the lore of, oh, this person's from Minnesota. Oh, this person's from Michigan State. Oh, this person's from, you know, South Carolina. But to make sure that we're also looking at these resume reels and giving others individuals opportunities. I mean, I'm following so many different people on social. It's not even funny. But to go back to your original questions, because I like to vent and vamp a little bit, but go back to your original question, is it's important for me to recognize the situation that we are in, and also to make sure that I'm an advocate to create opportunities for individuals.
I heard you say that you have to be cognizant of your race in this industry, and especially in your management role. What do you mean by that when you say you need to be cognizant of it?
A perfect example of perfect example of that is when we are, for instance, when the these mission statements, not these mission statements, but these statements that came out from these organizations from the George Floyd incident, right? And Breonna Taylor and those incidents that came out. You know, my phone was off the hook. I mean, I had all kinds of people calling me about, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? What do you think about this? And there's part of me I have to be cognizant of that I'm also talking to individuals that may have a smaller circle. They don't know that many black people that they trust to be able to give some comment and get some guidance to. So being cognizant of that aspect of it, being cognizant of the fact that, you know, I come into these meetings and I come into interaction with other organizations, whether the IDEA Conference, SVG, NAB, any other acronym that you want to say out there, and interacting with some individuals, understanding that this may be one of the few interactions they have with a black professional. And understanding that I need to make sure that I adhere and break down some of the stereotypes that they may have or some of the biases they may have. It's important because that little bit may open the door for somebody else to be hired later on down the line, or business for somebody later on down the line. It sucks. But it's a necessary reality for me that I have to understand that, you know, in some forms and some arenas, I am a delegate and I have to make sure that I am putting the best foot forward.
So for administrators who are striving to hire and foster a more diverse atmosphere in their workplace, hire and get more diverse candidates, I remember when I was first starting out and doing my first hire, and we were really disappointed with the diversity in the candidate pool all around. And our senior vice president asked, well, what did you do to promote a diverse candidate pool? And that was very eye-opening of like, oh, I didn't do anything. You know, we just put the job out. That's I think when I first came to realize that getting a diverse candidate or hiring a diverse workplace, or making your workplace more diverse, hiring diverse candidates, doesn't just happen from a normal application process. There's work that goes into the front end of that. What can hiring managers do to help foster a more diverse candidate pool, and create an environment that's more welcoming to a diverse workplace?
That is a question I get often. One of the first things that you want to start doing is you want to start inwardly, right? So you want to look at your networking. What does your circle look like? Is it homogenous? Is it a situation where everybody that you kind of network with looks the same? Because if it is, then that's going to be the first thing that you need to start looking at, because you need to start branching out your network and expanding your circles. You need to stop looking at just NCAA.com and some of these other websites you may post to, and start expanding on that. When you expand outside your network and start looking at your network and start to diversify your network, you start coming across some individuals that may put you in a proper direction to start recruiting. You want to start recruiting in the standpoint of looking out and see what else is out there, see what other minorities are doing some creative, and make a short list of those individuals. So that way, the next time that your job comes open, that you can actually start contacting them ahead of time and say, hey, I want to let you know that, hey, this job is open. Not tampering, but a situation where you're just letting people know that this job may be coming open. Is there anybody that you may know of that may be interested in a position like this, and may point you in the right direction of maybe not that person, but an individual that may be in their circle that may work out for you? The other thing is that you also look at, if you're getting a non-diverse pool that's coming back, that means you're not working hard enough. One of the first things that you might want to start doing is start looking at some organizations that are out there that are designed specifically for this, to connect. Look at the black creatives out there. There are black creatives out there that are belong to certain organizations or register with organizations that are strictly designed to put their name out there. One of them is BLK Originals. They're kind of new on the social media, and they have lists of photographers, videographers, social media managers, and admin. They're relatively new. Haven't been around a long time, but they're trying to make their push on social media. And if they're listening, I would love that endorsement check. That'd be great if I could get that. But if not, I understand. So BLK Originals, there's another website, BLK Creatives. It's another short list. You may have to register a little bit to get that list, but that's another list of individuals that are out there doing creative things. So there are numerous other organizations that are doing kind of the same thing as that, but just to let you know that that's out there, there's one of the things that you can look at to try to diversify your pool, get your job posted in those various spots and those various corners to diversify your pool. The other thing you still need to start looking outside these, we're going to look at the college realm, start looking at these Power Five schools, these traditional Power Five schools that you're looking at, start dipping your toe in that HBCU group. There are a lot of creatives out there that are doing some things with some small budgets. They're putting together some really phenomenal work that they just need a chance at some of these larger budgets or some of these toys that maybe we may have access to get their foot in the door and actually do some really, really good stuff, but they're already doing that now. But even to have that shot at some of the jobs that you may have opened. So, but really circling back to the whole entire thing, it is very important that you look at your networking, look at who's around you, look at your circle and make sure that that is diverse. If it's not diverse, that's the first place you need to start, because there's no way that you're going to be able to recruit and keep people on staff and diversify your staff unless that networking looks like what your staff is supposed to look like.
Yeah, that's great. You also, during the diversity and inclusion panel that you were on a couple months ago, you had brought up that you had done the Black History Month work for the last couple years, and you had removed yourself from that process this past year. As what else can be done interdepartmentally, working with other departments to try and make sure that things are being taken care of, for making sure that people's voices are heard in those regards?
I think the thing that we gotta start doing now is creating some avenues where we can get a little bit more feedback and create an environment where we can get a little bit more feedback. I think the thing that has been positive out of this is that these listening sessions that have come forward and some of these organizations have been very positive for individuals to be able to kind of tell their story a little bit or talk about some of their experiences. I think making sure that we are really, truly creating an environment and seeking out information and seeking out first person experiences and being open to those experiences. You know, I keep talking about to individuals, like, make sure we're not explaining away things. We're there just to listen. And from that, you can get some feedback. From that, you can create some items, some change, some agents of change. One of the things that we were talking about doing in the idea body was to come up with these caucuses. And these were groups that were put together, or these are going to be groups that are put together to create some avenues for common individuals to be able to voice some of their concerns and be able to talk about some issues that they may have. And from there, hopefully that some of these common issues, we can start addressing these. But to answer your question, Justin, the big thing, and you know, I joked about taking Black History Month off, but it was from the standpoint of, you know, I was tired of being the one carrying that banner. Like, I was tired of being one that I had to, you know, throw that flag up there, because it shouldn't have been me personally. It shouldn't have been a situation where I had to be the one to do it. This is everybody's history. Right. This is U.S. history that we're dealing with. It just happens to be this month that we're looking at this group and highlighting what they've done in history. But this is something that can be done in January, in December, in November, whatever month you name it. Right. And I would say the same thing for, women's history, Latin history, you name it. It is a situation where we got to be cognizant of making sure that whenever we are doing something, whether we're recognizing individuals, that we're doing so in a way that we're keeping all perspectives in check.
As a white guy in the industry, you know, as you know, other people in the industry who don't know what it's like to be a minority in the industry, how can we be allies? How can we help? What can we do to amplify those voices and to amplify the opportunity for change for the better in the industry?
Well, the biggest thing is, just from a social standpoint, is to be in a situation where, one, you're ready to act and be a voice when we're not in the room. So if there are things that are going on that don't seem appropriate, things that are being said or policies, not only that, but policies that are, look like they're going to be put in place, to be a voice in the room. I can't tell you how many times that, I hear something secondhand and it's like, well, what did you say? Well, I didn't know what to say. You got to be prepared to act, because that's the most important thing that an allyship that especially minority needs, because we're not in all those rooms, right? We haven't completely diversified, especially the higher in the food chain when you go. So I'm talking about collegiate athletics, the athletic director or senior athletic director. A lot of those are still, one looking body, right? So making sure that you're in a situation where you are ready to act, feel comfortable acting, is important. The other aspect I would say is, if there are opportunities that you can provide others to speak their voice, to make sure that you're providing those opportunities. Don't be speaking over the top of people. Don't speak for people. A pet peeve of mine now that's come to kind of come to fruition is also, don't tell me how to feel. I've come across this twice in the last 2 weeks, is someone trying to tell me how I should feel. Don't tell me how to feel. Allow us to be human beings as well. So if we're frustrated, we're upset, we're pissed off, we're, feel lonely or whatever, we're allowed to be able to have those feelings just like you are. And the reason why we're struggling through that may not be something that you'd be able to relate to, but just understand that that's still a human emotion that we have, and be there. It's like, man, I don't understand. Don't exactly understand what exactly we're going through, but hey, when the bars open up, we can go sit down and have a cold one, or, let's go get some nachos. We'll get you some ice cream or something like that, man. We can do that. I'm just here for you to let you know that I'm here for you. And if you want to vent and be upset, and I may not understand why you're upset, that's fine. And sometimes you just need a voice to vent to, too. It's like, let me tell you what she said to me. And then you may sit there and go, I don't really see why that's a problem, but you're really upset about that. But honor that they're upset about it. It's those things are important. So the allyship is being able to act when we're not present, being somebody to be able to listen to, and then when you're ready to jump in, be passionate about it. You see some of the stuff that happened with George Floyd at the very beginning, the black squares and the Black Lives Matter and all this stuff that came up, and now it's kind of sizzled out a little bit, not necessarily sizzled out, but it's waned a little bit. Be just as active, be just as upset as if this was happening to your mother or your brother or your sister or your friends. Just be just as passionate, because it's happening to your brother, your sister, your friends, your coworkers.
Daryl is a great follow on Twitter too, if anybody needs to follow anyone. Daryl has a lot of great posts and a lot of great insight, because I think a lot of this also comes back to awareness, right? Because it's not something that I have lived, but having worked with you and followed you and seeing some of your posts and some of your comments and some of that has made me more aware. So if you want to share what your favorite kind of ice cream is for when that time comes.
Man, I'm big on Ben and Jerry's right now. I mean, there's a couple of reasons why, but really big on Ben and Jerry's, the Americano, the Dream Americano, something like that. It's like vanilla, caramel, chocolate chunks, and then cone, waffle cone, all mixed into. Oh man,
ooh,
yeah, it's, yeah. COVID has not been good. I put on some LBs, and Ben and Jerry's is part of it. So,
well, next time there's an idea conference, I'll have to find some Ben and Jerry's nearby. Can I ask you one more question? So I asked Garrett I asked Garrett and Brock this before the job podcast that we did. What's a job that you had back in the day that you weren't sure was really something you wanted to do, but you did, and that you're seeing it pay off today?
Oh man, that's a good question. You know what? A job that I did that is paying dividends right now, and I had no idea it would at the time, and it's just because of how strange it was, is those of you in the Midwest, Hy-Vee Grocery. I worked customer service there, and this was back in the day where customer service was a catch-all for everything. Like, we developed film. Yeah, there was film that you developed. It was like stuff you put inside the camera. Those of you who are young, stuff you actually put inside the camera, not a memory card, but like actual film. And like, you took the pictures and you had to take it to somebody to get developed. And so we did 1 hour development, man. I did FedEx packaging, UPS packaging, regular mail. I sold people stamps, did dry cleaning. We had a video service, but the skill set that I learned there is really working with people in customer service. And in management, in dealing with coaches, dealing with upper administration, dealing with people, it is just customer service all the way around, right? And it's crazy how much of the, you know, oh, make sure you're making eye contact, you're smiling, and you give them options, and you know, this is a no, but I can do this, or you try to elevate your execution as best as you possibly can. And then you've exhausted what you can do, and then moving on to a manager, but explain the situation and be there and be accountable for it. It's crazy that how much of that stuff has come back. So those of you who are out there looking for, you know, small jobs and stuff like that, I'm telling you, customer service, any kind of customer service anywhere, goes a long way. Goes a long way. I had no idea that some of the skill sets I learned there were going to carry over as much as they did.
Is there anything else we want to cover?
I'd say, you know, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it. The big thing, you know, for the students out there, those who are in college, take advantage of your opportunities. I can't tell you enough that once you leave, it will be different. And it is so important to make sure that you're taking advantage of those opportunities, and then ask questions. If you're working with somebody on the video staff, make sure you're asking questions. We may be annoyed at first because we're on a deadline. But you know, the good ones understand that, you know, it's coming from a good place and you're trying to get better. And them being better while they're working with you makes everybody better. And those of you who are out there swimming in that large ocean right now, trying to find a job with this COVID stuff that's happening, hang in there. I know there are a lot of managers out there that, you know, are kind of taking notice of people who've been let go, people who've just graduated, people with their resume reels. Keep your resume reel up and going. Eventually, we'll get out of this. I don't know when it's going to be, but eventually we'll get out of this, and hiring will start again. So just, you know, they say stay ready. I mean, seriously. And I know it's hard. If you're living with your mama and them, you know, make sure that you're doing some dishes and doing some cooking and pay your weight. But, you know, good things will come to those who work hard. You know, I don't know your path. I don't know what's in store for you. But I'm a religious person. And you know, those of you who are religious, keep your faith. Keep going forward. Understand where your power is coming from. Those of you who are not spiritual, you know, find your center. And find your passion and be passionate about it, because that will still be your compass.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice. So keep creating.